Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting
email from a caller and a writer, and I'll tell you what, this person called me and left me a message, and then they wrote me because they were too embarrassed to talk about their issue face to face. You know, that's what I know about sexual addiction and partners of sex addicts, is that it takes a lot to reach out and share your concerns, your questions, and your stories. And that's why I am so happy to be here tonight, talking with you and supporting you, whether you have a sexual addiction, whether you're the partner of a sex addict, and you know that you've got to figure out how to control your life. You know, I live by the principle, and I advocate my clients live by the same principle, and that is the Serenity Prayer. And you all probably know how that goes. It says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And when you're in crisis, or when you feel defeated, whether you're an addict and you just can't get on track, partner of an addict and you just don't know what to believe anymore, that serenity prayer is essential in helping you decide what can you do. You know, if you're an addict, you know that you didn't cause this problem. You can't cure it, and you certainly can't control it. And yet I do have a lot of partners who, once discovery has occurred, all of a sudden they're in the power-packed position. Now, I say that meaning that their entire world has been rocked. Their lives are upside down. But what I know to be true is that lots of them are able to say to the sex addict, you know, you do it my way or you hit the highway because I'm not going to live like this anymore. And initially, that works. After a while, it doesn't, because anytime we try to control somebody else, we're doomed for long-term failure. And yet, truly, in terms of partner trauma and what works with sex addicts and partners, if the sex addict can show the partner that he or she is willing to do whatever it takes to regain and rebuild trust and live the life that the two of them want, that's a win-win. Now, sometimes it is so traumatic for a partner that they just can't get over it. And although I have not seen this to be the case in my practice very often, I do talk to lots of CSATs, certified sexual addictions therapists, and lots of partner coaches and partner therapists that watch an addict fail again and again and again, or not truly come clean and work the program they need to work to get over, to manage this entire terrible disease. And when that's the case, it's oftentimes necessary to decide when is enough enough. And if you go to my carolthecoach.com website, or even my Sex Help with Carol the Coach, I have several articles just in general that have the when is enough, enough motto. You know, I am a therapist and a coach, and I believe that I should not be working harder than my clients. It's one of my own personal rules. And sometimes I care so much about clients that I start working harder than they do. I stay late for them for appointments, or I go over the homework that they didn't do so that they get the concepts. And if I'm working harder than they are, I'm not doing them any favors. I am enabling them. Or if you're an addict or a partner and you find yourself working super hard, and, you know, it doesn't seem to be gaining any results. As a matter of fact, you're working and working and working and working. Nothing seems to be changing. It may be time to say when is enough enough. And tonight I have Crystal Ray Morrissey on. And she's an APSAT certified partner coach. Now, you remember, that is one of the organizations that I, too, have been certified with as a trained therapist. And we have been trained by the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists. She is also a certified life relationship and divorce recovery coach. And, you know, I saw my group tonight that in all of my years of doing radio for addicts and partners, I've never had anybody on to talk about divorce, you know, and therapeutic separation. You know, I've definitely mentioned therapeutic separation because I do think sometimes that is the most helpful thing that we can do in a relationship, especially for the partners, when they need a little separation so that they can gain some clarity and a better sense of themselves. But I realized that Crystal had a very important message, and she is somebody who has incredible passionate sensitivity to the experiences faced by those who are thinking about a separation, thinking about divorcing, or perhaps are divorced. So I thought we'd have her on and she could talk about her programs that she has for partners of sex addicts and the many recovery concepts that she provides to partners in terms of decision making and boundary setting and grieving and healing and hope, moving on. I never want you to feel like your life is over. And I don't mean that in a suicidal way. I just mean that if your entire life has been based on the love you have for your spouse and he or she's a sex addict, and then you find out that the marriage was an illusion because you had no idea that kind of stuff was going on, it's time to grieve, to process the feelings, and then navigate your life in a way where you redesign it. The same thing I say to addicts. You know, I don't want anybody to ever have to go through addiction, but I'm here to tell you, absolutely here to tell you that if you are willing to do what it takes to learn how to manage and recover from sexual addiction, you will be the best person possible. You got to work the program, and when you do work it, it works, and that's my guarantee. And it's hard work, I am now working with many, many men and women taking their lives to the next level because they're no longer slaves by their addiction. They no longer have the significant urges and cravings that they can't manage. Their life is manageable. And that's a great thing, too. So if you're listening to this show for the first time, or for the 100th time, because I have over 200 shows, I want you to know there is hope, strength, and recovery. And when there isn't with your partner or spouse, there always is for you. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Now, I got a couple of things I want to tell you. I'm looking for it right now. You know, I have this studio is my home. And many of you might have heard Boo in the background, or if you've gone to my YouTube videos. If you go to Sex Health with Carol the Coach on YouTube, you'll get lots of great information if you're a sex addict or a partner. You know, there are 6, 8, 10, 12-minute lessons on how to focus on yourself, how to set boundaries, you know, what are the three circles, how do you learn how to stop objectifying. Just give you a lot of tips. So take a look at that. Go to YouTube, put in Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and take a look at my videos, regardless of whether you're a partner or an addict. And I always ask you, please, please, please go to my website, sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com, and donate to sexual addiction research. You do that by buying Sexual Addiction Wisdom from the Masters. 12 interviews with people who are experts in the field, both for partners, sex addicts, and sex addicts themselves. So we have Patrick Carnes. You know, we have Claudia Black. We have Carol the Coach. We have Ken Adams. We have Barbara Steffens. Dr. John Caldwell, who talks about mindfulness. Linda Hatch, who talks about rebuilding the relationship after sex addiction. These are excellent interviews where experts in the field across the world help you to learn the basic concepts of tools that will help to navigate your life. So again, you can get the ebook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the typical ways you get ebooks. If you want the hard copy edition, go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and purchase it there, and I will send you that book. Because we did it ebook style, and then what I realized is a lot of people still love the old-fashioned books in their hands. So I said, okay, I'm going to print some out. We're going to get them set up. And we will send them out to you because that's what I believe in doing, educating you about all the choices that you have in your life. Again, that book is Sexual Addiction Wisdom from the Masters, and you go to sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com and order yourself a copy. And every bit of money, none of it comes to me. It all goes to sexual addiction research. Because we got to learn more about this illness so we can help more and more people, more and more couples to work through the recovery process and be the best person that they can be. Now, I am absolutely thrilled to be talking with Crystal Ray Morrissey today. And, you know, she really has made it her mission. She has her own personal story and she has been more than willing to talk about how profoundly traumatic it can be to love a sex addict and what happens if the relationship doesn't get healthier. You know, when is enough enough? When do you know what your next choice is? You know, is that a therapeutic separation? Is that a divorce? You know, what are your options? So I really want to welcome Crystal to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And First of all, I got to tell you, this is such good information, and I have never done a show on therapeutic recovery and divorce. So welcome to Sex Help with Carol the Coach.
Well, thank you, Carol. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. I had told everybody that, you know, obviously you are an APSAT certified partner coach as well as a certified life, relationship, and divorce recovery coach. You really have made it your mission and your niche to help people with this process. Can you talk a little bit about how you got into this field and what motivated you, what gave you such passion?
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that. I'm on my second marriage. My first marriage ended very traumatically after my first husband's problematic sexual behavior. And that was a long time ago, I've been in my second SA marriage now for the past 10 years. And so I've been living and working and healing my own recovery in this world for the past 10 years. And about 4 to 5 years ago, I started looking, you know, seriously at the idea of beginning to do more than working with other partners in my spare time, but to consider making it more of a, excuse me, I'm battling a cold here today, making it more of a full-time professional calling rather than just an amateur one. And ultimately, what made me decide, and this is very apropos to our topic tonight, but made me to decide to really push forward and make that happen rather than just dream about it, was when I read a very mainstream Christian book for women of faith on the topic of recovering from the impact of sex addiction in your husband. And the primary focal point of the book was that women really need to get their stuff together so that God can use them to help their husbands in their recovery. And I was so very, very angry at the way the book positioned the woman's healing, the wife's healing, as being very incidental, almost an after fact to her husband's afterthought. That's the word I'm looking for, to her husband's recovery. And so really from the very beginning, when I decided to begin working with partners as a coach, I knew that I didn't want to specialize only in an area that would help women who wanted to stay in their relationships, but would be equally equipped to help women whose relationships didn't survive, whether that was a choice of theirs, the choice of their SA, or some combination thereof. So that's when I decided to do this professionally. I really did pursue both my couples relationship training and divorce recovery coach training, in addition to the basic life coach training and the APSAT certified partner coach training.
Yeah, you know, it is always a counselor's mission to keep people together if they want to reconciliate and if it is healthy for the relationship. And so you deal with that definite gray area of what happens when it's not healthy to stay together, and how do we destigmatize women who make that choice? I mean, they should not absolutely feel responsible for their husband's recovery and happiness, correct?
Right. Very true. Very true. And I like that you use the word stigma, because I find that, you know, the sex addiction community is growing, but it's still relatively small, and the resources are still relatively limited. And, you know, for any woman who goes to look into what is out there for partners of sex addicts, there is not one single book specifically for divorcing partners of sex addicts or separated partners. And even in the very good books about women and choices and those sorts of things related to sex addiction, there may be a chapter at most, or half a chapter, or even a page or half a page related to the after effects for women who don't. So that sense of marginalization, when women who have begun recovery begin to feel like, okay, there might be some safe places for me, there might be a community that really honors and respects the trauma that I'm living through, all of that kind of grinds to a screeching halt when that relationship turns the point and turns the corner to it's definitely not going to survive.
So obviously, initially, you absolutely understood how it felt to be the partner of a sex addict and to be going through something like this. And then when you did the research and when you looked for the tools, you realized that nobody had helped client, the addict's partner, to navigate through what happens when enough is enough, or when consistent acting out continues to occur, when the partner continues to be wounded by behavior. And, you know, not everybody recovers from this. So when does a woman decide, hey, you know, I can no longer take this. I have to take care of myself. And of course, you and I both know that should be at the very beginning of the relationship. You know, when she first discovers that her husband is a sex addict, she should immediately go into, okay, how can I have self-care? What are my boundaries going to be? What do I need to do to keep myself safe? Wouldn't you agree?
I agree that's probably
so tell me
the
a little
ideal
bit
way to do it.
About,
I think because it's a little bit more complicated. Yeah.
Absolutely. Say a little bit about that. Tell me more.
Well, you know, so one of the things, there's a quote that I love from the book Intimate Treason by Claudia Black and Kara Tripodi, and it talks about how the crisis that a woman faces when she decides to stay or to leave the relationship in terms of like a permanent separation. So maybe there's an initial separation, but as far as what is the final outcome of the relationship, that often does not happen at the same time as the immediate crisis of discovery, because often it's not until after she, you know, goes through that extensive period of learning what sex addiction is, learning how serious her SA may or may not be. I mean, I know most of us who work in this field acknowledge that it's really only over a period of years that we can really see how truly dedicated a person is going to be in recovery, whether it's, you know, just kind of that initial thrust or whether it's got staying power for the long term. So I think that even though there are times when a woman might do everything right, quote unquote, in terms of laying the foundation for putting herself in a good position to make that decision, sometimes it actually is a little bit later on in the process before the reality of what she's going to need to do for the long term becomes clearer. Does that make
sense? Yeah, very well spoken. That it really is when you walk your talk and do that for long periods of time that shows all the loved ones that you are learning how to manage the illness. And you brought up the fact that obviously sex addicts can be well-meaning, but unless they're willing to really work the program and get the help they need, it's an easy addiction to fall back into. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is keep people feeling safe and stabilized, and partners deserve to really know what their options are. And you are a part of that. You're a big part of that. So tell me a little bit about the two greatest needs that you believe are experienced by partners who reach the point of deciding that they can no longer take the abuse, take the roller coaster effect of somebody who is working a program and then they're falling short. Or maybe they're not working it at all. Maybe they're just working on manipulating the partner into believing that they're doing what they need to.
Mm-hmm.
What are those two greatest
things? Yeah, and actually I would add a third option in there as well, and that is that there are relationships where the SA decides to leave the relationship after some period of time in recovery. And I think those can be the most painful because, excuse me, even in a situation where a partner may decide sometime in to go ahead and leave the relationship at a later date, she still usually gets that sense of satisfaction and empowerment that comes from making the best choice for her. And it's a totally different situation when she is sometimes the one who's left, you know, kind of holding things after all of that is said and done. But as far as the biggest needs, this is one that I have heard consistently across the board. During 2016 here, I have worked with 18 different women going through various levels of divorce or separation, as well as interviewing another 18 of my colleagues on the topic of helping women through the divorce and separation process. And the number one thing that everybody has told me, whether they're a client going through it themselves, a coach, a clinician, a clergy member, someone in the writing or research or academic fields, is that partners really, really, really need unqualified amounts of time and the decision that's right for them. You know, it's very common for those of us who work with partners to, you know, maybe have our own developed ideas or perspectives on what might be ideal for a partner, you know, kind of peeking in from the outside. But ultimately, it's not our lives that are going to change based on whether or not that partner makes one decision or the other. So, you know, without fail, partners feel usually, and this is admittedly, most of them say this is an admitted inference on their part, but they feel an extreme amount of pressure from people in their lives who some of them are very significantly and personally affected by the decision. You know, parents, grandparents, even the spouse themselves, church communities that might be very close-knit, that sort of thing. But for all of the opinions that everybody else has about the relationship, there's really nobody who is able to make that decision or who knows when it is the right time to make that decision as the woman herself who is going through it. So that's what I always characterize as the number one need that partners need as they face this down this decision of should I get a divorce, should I separate, what is best for me and in most cases for my children. And then the second big thing that I always talk about that partners need is really very practical and genuine and knowing emotional support, not only from those people who are close to them in their lives, like churches, therapists, other sorts of faith communities, family members, work acquaintances, those sorts of things, but more so even from other partners of sex addicts who understand what I call this compound trauma, not in the classic CPTSD kind of perspective on that term, but kind of this dual trauma of first the experience of living with a sex addict and then the experience of divorce from a sex addict. And I say divorce and separation kind of interchangeably, by the way. Forgive me, I'm not always consistent with that. That dual experience of first having lived through that early recovery process and then reaching a point of disintegrating or detaching from that connection that one had, which, you know, for most partners when they get married or when they embark on that serious relationship, thinks it may be a forever proposition. So for them to be able to connect with other women, you know, we all know who work or live in this field, the value of connecting with others who are also partners of SAs, but when you can connect with women who are not only partners of SAs, but who are also going through that separation or divorce process, that is something that there is absolutely no substitute for, in my experience.
Well, I absolutely would agree. So let's go over those one more time, because you said the two needs that are most important are the practical, genuine support system that partner has access to, and usually a support group of women who have been through this are ideal. And then the second thing you said was unqualified amounts of time and space?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Okay, so that partner of a sex addict really has the time and the space to be able to decide what is it that she needs or what are her boundaries, or, again, to determine that safety and stabilization, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you know, it may be obvious or seem obvious to somebody looking in upon the situation what a person might need for safety and stabilization, but for the person on the inside actually living it, it takes varying amounts of time to get there and certain kinds of supportive circumstances that create an environment where she can actually kind of quiet the emotional, you know, noise level enough to be able to determine how and when and if she's going to make that decision.
Well, and that's a really good point, because like you said, we as therapists might have a desire for it to happen in this certain amount of time, but mm-hmm. every case is different, and that has to come from a woman's own intuition and how she feels and what she thinks about the situation. So that is truly hers to determine. Now, saying that, you know, this is your niche, do you find that there is a certain amount of time after discovery that some women decide on divorce or separation?
Yeah. You know, that's a really, it's an interesting question, and this is probably a good time for me to put a little side note in here about statistics when it comes to sex addiction and divorce. Frankly, there aren't many good statistics that I've been able to find that I consider particularly trustworthy. So when I go to issues of kind of trying to quantify or measure some of this stuff, I often resort to some more anecdotal research techniques. So, for example, earlier this year, I did just a very informal but thoughtful survey specifically to ask women who are divorcers, professionals who work with these women, some various things that they've learned about how this timeline works, you know, when from discovery to decision, how long the divorce process itself can take, those sorts of things. So I had about 41 respondents in total to my little survey. And what I found is that for the women who decided to divorce or to permanently separate if they weren't married initially, the percentage from discovery to that decision, about 35% of women did it within the first year. Another 35% did it within 2 to 5 years. Only 10% made that decision between 5 to 10 years. And 20% made it between that 10 to 24 was the longest period of time from my 41 respondents. So, you know, typically the kind of the, and again, a very informal conclusion that I drew, but one that also does echo my own experience and kind of the way I've thought it to be, is that it tends to be either within that early period, that first 2 to 5 year period, or after 10 years of work in recovery post-discovery.
Okay, that makes sense. And obviously you're right. That's a small study, but at the same time, it is truly reflective of the women that you've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have said, and Crystal, you'll have to let me know if you've heard other therapists say this. My experience is when I work with men and women who have had a partner who has cheated. They're not serial cheaters, so they're not sex addicts, but they've cheated. Mm-hmm. My experience is that they're even more prone to separation and divorce early on. And that for some reason, partners of sex addicts go a little bit longer. And I've always wondered, I just talked about this on one of my YouTube videos. I didn't know if perhaps the partner realizes this isn't just somebody who went with a whim. This is somebody who's got a real illness. You know, they maybe have a little more compassion and empathy for their partner because they sense that this is, you know, not an issue of moral willpower. This is an issue of this guy or this woman's really, really sick. Or whether, you know, they have they've been with people that are more manipulative, and so they get hoodwinked a little bit more right off the bat. Have you seen that same correlation, or is this just something maybe I'm seeing in my own practice or here in the Midwest? You know, I really do believe different areas kind of constitute different things depending on, you know, we're in the Bible Belt, and that may have a factor, or it's a no-fault state, so women may not be as entitled to as much financially as other states. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And frankly, I think I might be qualified to answer that question after I've done more work in this area. I'm still relatively new to this field of research. So, you know, the vast majority of the women that I work with are partners of either men who believe they're sex addicts or the women who I work with believe they're sex addicts. So, or it's been clinically diagnosed. So I don't really have a great sampling by which to compare it with in terms of my work. I will say that you bring up a really important point, though, I think, with the sex addiction being an illness versus a moral failing, in that when women look at something as an addiction versus, you know, a really bad, really painful mistake that their partner made, that triggers the, well, I promise to be here in sickness and in health for those who have made vows to that effect. And also, this is something that I see in women who, for example, have worked long and hard, I mean, really done deep, hard work at giving their partner every possible chance at recovery and giving themselves every possible chance to heal. And that is that early on in recovery, women tend to catch the vision for what a recovering couple can look like. And in many cases, it fits that dream that they've always, always, always had for an intimate, connected, healthy relationship. Now, the vision and the reality on the ground are not always the same thing, and therein lies, you know, the conflict. But for women who are able to see other men in recovery who are being good husbands, who are staying sober, who are doing their own work, when they're able to meet other women who, you know, yeah, it's not that they don't stop struggling or they may still be experiencing pain on certain occasions from living with an addict in recovery, but they can see how those things do not necessarily exclude a happy, healthy, romantic relationship. They feel like they want to at least give it a try. And that's something that I'm not sure exists with the same sort of communal support within the post-infidelity community as we have here within the sex addiction recovery community. I don't know. Just
yeah, I would 100% agree. For those that are just tuning in, I'm talking with Crystal Ray Morrissey. She is an APSAT certified partner coach, and that, of course, is the APSAT is the Association Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialist, and she also is a certified life, relationship, and divorce recovery coach who has made it her mission to help partners work through their husband's infidelity. And she specifically has a niche for partners who are considering therapeutic separation, and or divorce. And so her website is www.womeneverafter.com. Tell us a little bit about your website. What can somebody expect to see when they get on womeneverafter.com?
Sure. Well, kind of my overarching information there at the website includes my philosophy about recovering women in general, whether or not it has to do with the sex addiction issue specifically. So I find that most of the women or most of the people who find my website do have some sort of connection to what I call S issues, which includes sex addiction, infidelity, pornography, or secrets. So I kind of try to keep it as broad as possible so that everyone feels invited and welcome within the work that we do there. I do offer some basic information for people who are not familiar with life coaching because, you know, there are a lot of different kinds of women in transition that I find really benefit from life coaching because they're not diagnosed as having any kind of mental illness or psychiatric condition that needs full-scale therapeutic support. And so for women like that who need some help determining where they're going and getting some clarity and some accountability and reaching it, life coaching can be a really great modality for them. So I offer some of that information on my page as well. The other thing I offer on my page is a blog. I love writing. Writing is one of my absolute favorite things to do. I consider it my quote-unquote native language, so I often communicate most passionately in writing. And I also, on my webpage, include some flyers for the different coaching groups that I do. I tend to keep it relatively up-to-date, but if in doubt, my contact information and all of that is also there. That's always a good shortcut to get current information about the groups that I operate.
Well, excellent. And again, you had recommended Claudia Black's book, and what is it? It's Beyond
Intimate
Treason book. Which one is that?
Mm-hmm. Intimate Treason, I believe the subtitle is Healing the Trauma. I'm sorry, I'm not going to remember the subtitle, but Intimate Treason is the primary title of the book.
Is Intimate Treason. What other books do you recommend for women who are dealing with sex addicts and want a better sense of their self and want to know what
right.
their options are?
Yes, absolutely. Well, one of the places, okay, so going back to what I said earlier, there really is no one book that encompasses both issues at the same time, the sex addiction issue and the divorce issue. There are excellent books on both topics, just not one that perfectly overlaps the two. So I typically find myself often referring parts of books or books for certain categories under certain circumstances. One of the books that I find myself recommending a lot right now is a book called Journey from Abandonment to Healing by Susan Anderson. And it's a full-scale nonfiction book. There is also a different book. It's not a companion book per se, but it's based on the same material called The Abandonment Recovery Workbook. And one of the things I love about pretty much everything Susan Anderson writes, and you can find her website too, I believe it's like abandonmentrecovery.net or something like that. But Susan Anderson writes specifically about research related to abandonment grief. And one of the reasons I love it for partners of sex addicts is because she talks about how abandonment grief is the kind of loss that we feel that's unique to the experience of being left. And when I work with partners of sex addicts, especially those who are leaving an SA relationship, I always need to step back and remind them that in most cases, they're not the ones initiating abandonment of the relationship. Usually the SA has done that a long time ago, or else they wouldn't be in the position of having to choose to leave the relationship, you know, in a tangible way. But what Susan Anderson does is she breaks down the grief process in a way that is really unique and different from typical Elizabeth Kubler-Ross model, and she uses five different stages of grief, the letters of which spell out the word swirl, S-W-I-R-L. So she categorizes the five stages of grief as shattering, withdrawal, internalization, rage, and lifting. And I won't go into a lot of time about it here, but spend a lot of time on it, but seriously, this, for partners who have felt like their SA chose the addiction over them, whether or not there was actually another individual woman involved or a series of behaviors involved, but that he chose to act out and chose to align his future with the addiction rather than with her. This book has been really revolutionary for myself and my clients in terms of understanding why did this grief feel so different from every other kind of grief I've dealt with before in my life. So it's a good one.
Absolutely. That sounds fascinating. And I'm sure for our partners of essays, it'll be very helpful to even understand that concept of swirl, because everything you said is the natural byproduct of what you feel when you've been betrayed. And obviously, somebody is a sex addict, they have betrayed you many, many times. So, you know, it's that illusion of what you thought you had versus what you've discovered is really what you've got right now. And that sounds like a wonderful book. Maybe you should be writing a book soon, since writing is your language of love. It sounds like this is something that you will more than likely do in the future.
It is a possibility. I have created a lot of material that I use in my own groups when I work with groups of partners going through the divorce and separation process. Right now I have one of my colleagues, another APSET colleague, Sarah Morales, down in Austin, Texas, is beta testing my material with her own group of divorcing partners. So she and I are going to be putting our heads together soon and kind of comparing notes. And hopefully between her work and my work and input from others among our amazing community of colleagues, we might be able to put something together that not only might help the individual partner going through this process of divorce, but also the practitioners who are looking for better resources to educate themselves and to refer to their clients.
Oh, and I'm glad you brought that up, because you said, yes, I'm here for sex addicts and certainly mostly partners in terms of the betrayal they've experienced, but you're also here for clinicians and coaches who want a better understanding of what the partner goes through and what her options are. Now, you know, you just talked about what some of the challenges are that women face in dealing with their ex-spouse or partner. And early on in the interview, you referenced the fact that sometimes there's some institution betrayal or some spiritual betrayal, because there are lots of religiosity and churches that believe that you should stay together at any cost. So can you share with us what challenges you feel that women face in dealing with their partners or their ex-spouses?
Mm-hmm. No, that's an excellent question. Interestingly, and I'll just take a slightly different approach on this, with the religiosity factor, I find this goes one of two ways. So there are a whole body of people that might say, you know, you marry for better or worse, you don't give up on your marriage, you stay with your spouse no matter what. There is, however, another whole population of people who say, if he cheated on you, why the hell are you still staying? Get out of this marriage as quickly as possible, especially if there's any nature of chronic or repetitive betrayal. So for a woman who's contemplating this ultimate separation within their relationship, it's almost a damned if I do, damned if I don't situation. There are people who will criticize me if I stay, and there are people who will criticize me if I go. So, you know, one of the factors that I find useful when I'm working with clients who are going through a divorce, especially the ones who have already done some work in recovery, so they've done some skills with developing boundaries, to building self-care into their routine, communication boundaries, like the fact that you don't really have to tell everybody everything that's going on about your business, even if they think you should, that kind of thing. You know, there are a lot of different principles that they've already begun to see in recovery that even though the manifestation of them or the details of them look very different in relationship to an ex versus, you know, a committed romantic partner, the principles are still the same. So one of the places, going back to what I said initially about, you know, damned if I do, damned if I don't, one of the things that I often hear from my clients is this concept of failure. Failure can feel like a really, really big fat label slapped upon a relationship that doesn't survive under any circumstances, but even or especially under this one. So, for example, the way that failure feels and looks very different for a woman whose relationship is reaching its end rather than a woman who is still working it from the inside is it's still failure. I mean, any partner who is going through marital issues like that recognize that something has broken down very significantly within their relationship. But for the most part, it's a very private failure. It's not one that the world needs to know. In most cases, there are some, but not something that the world just needs to know automatically because it's going on. Divorce, however, is very final. It's very permanent, and it's very public. I have never yet a woman who's gotten divorced who hasn't ultimately had to tell the world, yeah, guess what? My marriage, it didn't survive. It didn't succeed. You know, call it how you will, but to some degree or another, the marriage, the relationship itself was a failure. So it's very much a reframing and a perspective shift that I can do with my clients, but that's just one little example of an area where a concept that can be applied straight across the board, either in the divorce camp or the partner of the sex addict camp, kind of takes on a different nature to it when those two things are put together.
So how do you think a woman who leaves her SA relationship, how do you believe that impacts her personal identity?
Oh, huge, 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 huge. First of all, labels are tough in this situation. And I first encountered this when I began writing some descriptive marketing material for my first partner's group. On one hand, I was still trying to determine for myself and, you know, my role as a coach, did I want this to be a group for women who were divorcing exclusively, meaning, you know, they'd been married and now needed a legal divorce, or did I want to open it up to partners who had also been living in a committed relationship but perhaps had not been legally married? Did I want to make it for partners of sex addicts or for partners of all women affected by infidelity or chronic infidelity? I mean, every area within this field has so many different layers and levels of labels. And my personal belief about labels is that they're both personal, meaning only the person who is most clearly affected by it is the one who should get to use it as an identifying phrase for themselves. I also think that it's very empowering. Using a label can either be very productive in a positive way or it can be very harmful in a negative way. So when it comes to labels, one of the things that I've done a lot of work on with my clients is, so what do you want to be called? I mean, especially if you're no longer staying with your SA, do you still want to be called the partner of an SA? Do you want to be considered, you know, do you want to leave that all behind? Do you want to be a survivor? It's interesting. I asked this of one of my groups once, and one of my clients who just, she cracks me up on a regular basis because she is so incredibly profound and funny. She said, what do I want to be called? Two words come to mind, warrior and roadkill. And I just thought that was such a poignant vignette, really, of kind of the two extremes. You know, she's a warrior, she's a survivor, but she's also really flattened by this whole experience. And, you know, the other thing that I find to be really interesting and true about labels is that it's not always one and done. You know, there can be a progression, kind of various phases to the situation as well. I know there was an interview recently by a journalist who has spoken with Elizabeth Smart, who's been in the media a lot lately, in relative to her kidnapping and her experience with that whole situation. And she talked about how when Elizabeth refers to her experience, she uses some words interchangeably, like rape victim and survivor of sexual assault. And what Elizabeth says is that those terms, even though she uses them kind of interchangeably, are not synonymous, that going through the abuse, she felt like a victim, and having gone past it and gotten through it, considers herself more of a survivor. So I'm a very strong advocate for allowing each of my clients and each partner going through this to determine what she wants to be called for herself. And I think as a field and as a community, you know, we're just going to have to kind of tiptoe our way around the complexities and the awkwardnesses of some of it until or unless we find something that's going to work as a whole.
Yeah, very good point. And so in what areas do you think clients should be working on developing new dreams in the aftermath of, you know, divorce or separation? I mean, this is, people are usually reeling and they're doing the very best they can, and they feel like their heads are just above water. And it sounds like as a divorce recovery coach, you believe that dreams should be a part of their future vision.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's an act of faith. It's a risk for a partner who has been so incredibly devastated. Every time she's, especially those who've been in recovery for a while with their SA, every time she's dared to hope that things might now be better, or that the worst part is behind them, you know, perhaps there's no sustained sobriety and things never really get any traction in recovery, to consider the idea that dreaming again could be anything except for further disappointment. But there was a quote I recently came across by, Glennon Melton Doyle, who wrote that book, Love Warrior. And she wrote, not in this book, somewhere else, but a quote that said, when one is burying one dream, one might want to plant a new one. So this is something that I really work with my clients. There is the woman who trained me as a divorce recovery coach. Her name is Lori Rubenstein, and she wrote a book called Transcending Divorce, and she teaches about forgiveness. She's a former divorce attorney. She's a divorce mediator. She wears a lot of hats. But she has an exercise that she taught to us in our training to be divorce recovery coaches, and she calls it the lifelong dream exercise. And she introduces the exercise by suggesting this question: what if dreams die hard because they often aren't supposed to die? So she walks clients through this process of identifying a dream that they once held, some kind of childhood dream for their future when they look ahead and what they want to be true for their lives, and taking from that dream, kind of stripping away the details and getting down to the core values or the core characteristics that made that dream meaningful to them, and then encouraging them to build new dreams that, for example, the details may not even be possible. You know, a woman goes through so many incredible changes, whether it's with her finances or her location or her career or the structure of her nuclear family during a divorce. So many of the things that she might have once thought possible simply are not realistically possible anymore since the divorce. However, what she can do is create new dreams that build upon those same core values and characteristics that existed at the heart of the old one. So this is an area where my clients begin to really find some empowerment for their futures, where their future is no longer dependent upon whether their partner is going to stay in recovery or not. This is really them alone, independently, moving on afterward, all of this, and it's a place where they really begin to get some traction and begin to really enjoy and embrace being on their own and being really the architect of their own future in this way, in this area.
So now, what practical help can coaches, clinicians, clergy, community mm-hmm. leaders, and just other professionals in general, what practical help can you encourage practitioners to offer to women during this process of divorce and separation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, just a couple quickly. The number one thing that I heard from clients and also heard from some of my colleagues who seem the most secure and confident in working with partners through separation or divorce is that it would be very valuable to clients if these supportive and helping professionals could somehow build relationships with other professionals within their communities, whether those are attorneys, counselors for children, mediators, even financial planners, doctors, these sorts of things. Because too often when a woman is at that point, like you said, the constant trauma of just doing the next thing and making the next decision and taking the next move can be so overwhelming that the last thing she really feels safe and secure in doing is just sitting down and opening up a phone book or, you know, whatever the virtual version of that is these days, and just taking a name. You know, so if practitioners can develop a small, doesn't have to be deep, but a small and quality reference list of people in their area that they consider as trusted colleagues to refer to their clients, that would be something that would be really helpful to partners going through those transitions. Another thing is, and this is another thing I picked up from Lori Rubenstein, oftentimes one of the biggest questions partners will ask in terms of starting over again is, how will I ever be able to trust somebody else again? And Lori Rubenstein says, can we please stop peddling to these partners the fairy tale that they will be able to trust anyone again anytime soon? Can we please start funneling all of that energy into helping them learn how to help and trust themselves? And I love that because, you know, it really rings true with my experience as well. Not that there are no trustworthy people in a partner's life, but this is the ideal and probably the most critical time for her to learn how to trust her own instincts. And I believe, and I believe you would agree with me on this too, that it is possible to heal that intuition and to begin using it in really effective ways in the future, no matter what the relationship status becomes.
Well, absolutely, Crystal. Are you there?
I'm here.
Can you hear me? I would highly recommend for people to go to your website. You are just filled with so much knowledge. Again, that website is womeneverafter.com. I'm talking with Crystal Ray Morrissey, and you can catch her on Facebook, Women Ever After, or S. Engel Support. Crystal, thank you so much for all of your wisdom, and I hope when you do put that book together that you get a hold of me and we get to interview you again.
I would love that. I will keep that in mind. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Carol.
Hey, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Right. Again, she is an amazing, amazing expert on separation, divorce, and therapeutic separation for partners of sex addicts. And if you're considering doing that, I highly encourage you get a hold of her through her website, womeneverafter.com. Well, I so appreciate you listening to me. I know for the sex addicts out there that are listening, they're probably scared to death. You know, this is always something that you may be dealing with, you know. And truly, when I work with addicts who are emotionally
working on developing their maturity, they realize that there's been so much collateral damage caused that they're willing to do whatever it takes to make that process for the partner smoother. And so I appreciate your position too, because the last thing you want is to experience a failed marriage, but sometimes there's been so much damage. It's really up to the partner and the addict alike to decide together what's in the best interest of especially the partner, because she didn't ask for this. And this was, in so many ways, reflective of something that just happened to her. All right. I hope that we've educated you tonight, and I look forward to talking with you next week. So as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And for all the women out there that want a better sense of themselves, their boundaries, and the tools that are available to them, take a look at My Sexually Addicted Spouse by Barbara Steffens and Intimate Treason by Claudia Black. And make yourself educated about what you need to do to create the life you deserve. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week.